Dear listener, I hope this intro finds you well. I wanted to touch base about the conversation attached to this episode. I recorded it in October 2022, but I think it works really well as a follow-up to the recently finished Women's World Cup. I spoke with Caroline Fitzgerald. She is the founder and CEO of Goals, all caps. She works on the business side of women's sports. I don't want to get too into the weeds just yet, but here are a few key takeaways from our one-on-one. Time is a flat circle. Progress isn't linear. Angel City is the blueprint for sponsorship revenue in women's sports. I can circle back next week to discuss. Let me know. Lukewarm regards, Cheyenne. I am absolutely thrilled to be joined today by Caroline Fitzgerald, the CEO and founder of Goal Sports. Please tell me what you've got going on right now and what exactly Goal Sports provides to the sports industry.
Yeah, absolutely. It's definitely a pretty busy time right now for Goals, but that's how I like it, because every meeting, every email, every message we send, everything we do, it's another step forward in growing the women's sports industry. So it's very purpose driven for me. So yeah, I'm happy to tell you more about what I do and what Goal Sports is. So Goals, in its iteration right now, because we definitely have evolved since Goals first launched as an Instagram account in August of 2020. But what we do right now at Goals is a sponsorship and marketing agency that helps underfunded women's sports teams and organizations get more resources through sponsorship deals, essentially. So we go out on behalf of these women's sports teams and nonprofits and other organizations we work with and help them sign more corporate partners. I started Goals, like I said, in August of 2020, after about 10 years of working in marketing and getting a bunch of events and activation and sales experience across a variety of industries. Most recently, I was the senior vice president of partnerships and sponsorships at the Dick's Sporting Goods Pittsburgh Marathon and the organization that puts on all the major running events in Pittsburgh. So that was my experience in the sports industry. And then in 2020, of course, the pandemic hit and I was home the whole time, but, you know, wasn't as connected to sport and the community impact since I was sitting in my house and was really craving some more connection. I think we all were at the time. And I also took the moment to really do some soul searching, essentially, just what was kind of my larger purpose. And when we eventually came out of, I don't even know if that's a thing, but came out of the pandemic, what would my life look like? And I had this idea that was inspired by the 2020 WNBA season and everything that was happening in women's sports at the time, to do something that would support female athletes and help grow women's sports. And I can go more into the journey of Goals, but yeah, we started just kind of as a COVID hobby, as an Instagram account, and it's been in business for a year. So it's been an exciting ride, and I love being in the women's sports community.
So much of what you're doing, especially as a startup, shifts day to day, I'm sure. How does that traditional sales and marketing experience guide you in what you're doing for Goals?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel, you know, I talk a lot with students in the sports industry and peers, and it seems like everybody has a lot of people have like windy career paths. You know, you come out of college and you think you're going to land like that dream internship that will eventually get you to your dream job in the same company. And it's just going to be upward mobility, right, to that job that you've always wanted to. But the reality is A lot of people wind through different experiences, different industries, work with different people. And for me, it felt like every single experience that I had, starting from literally my first moment playing sport as a kid up to the moment where I decided to start Goals, every single one of those experiences kind of prepped me for that moment to go all in, start my own business. Kind of a scary moment in the pandemic where we weren't really sure what was going on, especially with sports and live events. But I was absolutely so confident in my ability to do it. And I think that's the biggest thing that my traditional schooling and experience gave me. It was the confidence to know that I could do this. And not only could I do it, but I probably would be okay at it if I worked hard at it and put intention behind it.
Now, that's actually a great metaphor for what I'm sure many conversations you've had with companies and businesses about potential partnership opportunities with women's sports. Do you find yourself in those conversations instilling the confidence that you have in others, or do they take as much convincing as I think we feel like fans do to buy in on women's sports?
That's a really interesting question. And, you know, it depends. I would say the partners that I've been able to form partnerships with on behalf of these women's sports organizations, they don't take a lot of convincing. It's usually pretty quick when you get in front of the right decision maker that they're all in and they're like, yes, we see the value in investing in women. We absolutely want to support this. It doesn't take a lot when you get in front of the right person. Some people, it does take a little bit longer. And you know what? I think that's not surprising, knowing how little media coverage women's sports have received to date. A lot of the conversations I have are really educational conversations. A lot of these decision makers have never been pitched to sponsor women's sports before. So this is the first time they're hearing about these opportunities or learning more about the leagues and the teams that I represent. So, you know, it's a combination. There's some people that love it, follow it, are all in, are excited to come on right away as partners. Others are looking for more information and interested in getting educated. For me, though, I see both of those conversations as really, really important to have. I really feel that what we're doing at Goals is a form of activism, that we are going out and educating these really important decision makers on these opportunities, showing them the data behind why it's good business to invest in women, telling them the stories behind these athletes that they may not have heard before. So no matter what, they're good conversations, but it definitely is a combination of, I would say, education, and then right away we'll get that person that's all in.
Now, when you talk about media, it's been traditional media and cable that I think is the space that sports in general has occupied. And we say sports traditionally, when you say sports, most people think of men's sports, which is, I know what you're working very, very hard to change. And correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't have any of the experience that you have, but when I try to explain this growth of women's sports in the country, I see it almost as this, a sleeping giant, but B, a startup vibe or mentality, where when you are looking to market it or spread the gospel, so to speak, as big of a titan as traditional media feels, it's almost a quicker step to get exposure by going to these unconventional routes. And for the National Women's Soccer League and WSL, I'm thinking of things like Twitch, Paramount Plus, which is the new baby of a traditional media outlet. Do you view it the same way? Do you feel like we're kind of skipping all of the slower path, even if it is the traditional path? Do you see that happening? And do you think that that's what's giving women's sports the edge right now?
Great question. I think you are spot on. There are a couple reasons why I think women's sports are actually positioned better for growth than their male counterparts. The first is the increased demand for brands to have more of a social purpose than just offering a product. So people are more likely to spend their dollars with brands who are selling something. They're investing in some sort of social cause or working for some sort of bit of social justice. There's more of a purpose or a cause behind it. So when you look at the sports industry, female athletes are at their core activists. They are existing in a sports world that was built for men by men. They're getting paid so much less than their male counterparts. There's less media coverage, less sponsorship dollars, less support, less opportunities. Oftentimes it's not very safe environments that they're playing in. So they're up against all of these barriers. So just by existing in those spaces, they are activists. And as consumers become more conscious about what brands they support, how they spend their time, where they spend their dollars, women's sports are not only their presence as activism, but they're actually going above and beyond to be activists. The 2020 WNBA season is the example I gave earlier, but that season was probably the most politically charged sports season in history. I think a really good argument can be made for that. The women in the bubble fought for racial and social justice, dedicated the whole season to the Black Lives Matter movement. And that was a season where they saw record-breaking viewership, sponsorship, media coverage, etc. So them being inherent activists, I think is point number one that positions women's sports for monumental growth. Number two is what you touched on, which is we've prepped women's sports fans. And this is like kind of by accident and like because of this systematic failure to give women's sports the same media coverage that men's sports have, we've trained women's sports fans to be incredibly digitally and social media-ly, that's not a word, socially savvy. So they're really, really dedicated and they're really good at finding ways to consume women's sports in non-traditional platforms. So for example, if you're a women's sports fan, you probably know this scavenger hunt, but when there is a major women's sporting event that's happening, women's sports fans are usually going on this like wild chase through the internet to say, where can I stream? Is there a link here? Do I need to be on like Paramount or ESPN or Twitch? Where am I going to watch this thing? Because it's not as simple as just turning on the TV and seeing women's sports on TV. So women's sports fans go on these scavenger hunts. And to go on these scavenger hunts successfully, they're typically on social media, Twitter, for example, talking to friends to say, where are you watching this game? And so they're just in these digital social media spaces. And that's where they like to consume women's sports. So as we're in this digital age where people are consuming their content more on their phones and on screens than on TV, that's how women's sports fans are already behaving. So they're right there. And the other part of that is as we're seeing just people in general, not even women's sports fans, people prefer to stream their content rather than watch it on traditional linear. That's how women's sports fans have been watching our sport for years and years and years. So as streaming is on the rise, as athlete activism is on the rise, as we're seeing a fan base, a customer that's more digitally and socially savvy, women's sports are really, really primed and positioned for some significant growth.
Right, right. This actually reminds me of a tweet I found and I just pulled it up. I thought it was so funny. I shared it to Instagram. It said, the illegal streaming site I use to watch footy has women's games listed out now. #equality.
If you need to find something on the internet, employ a women's sports fan because we have gone to the edges of the earth to figure out how to watch our favorite game.
Now, I think I'm realizing this as we're talking, that that's another way in which women's sports is already ahead of the curve. I am not nearly as familiar with the WNBA. I would not have paid much attention to what was going on with the league at that time had it not been so prevalent on social media and such a huge topic of conversation across the entire sports industry, which is to your point, just a true testament to the growth and the undeniable presence that they have. Is there anything when it comes to women's sports, any trend or any culture, mentality, et cetera, any business practice that you either admire or that you pay a lot of attention to when it comes to the work that you're doing?
That's a really good question. You know, I just in the nature of the space that I'm in with partnership sales and sponsorship deals, I pay a lot of attention to how how deals in the women's sports space come together and what those deals look like. So I just finished a master's in global sport program through NYU. And the bulk of the research I did while I was there was on the Angel City Football Club. Not the newest, the second newest, I guess, to the National Women's Soccer League. They're based in Los Angeles. And just from moment number one, when this team announced that they were even launching, they've done things a little bit differently. They are majority female owned. They have a huge celebrity investor group. They're doing a ton around fan engagement in the Los Angeles area and really connecting with the community there. But the thing that I paid the most attention to and did my research on is how they build their partnerships model. So Angel City FC built a model that 10% of every sponsorship that they brought in would go back to a community impact organization in the Los Angeles area. So it's very cool. So DoorDash, as an example, came on as the jersey partner or one of their jersey partners. And as a result, 10% of that value went back to delivering meals to people in need in the Los Angeles area. So that's one example. They've done other things where Jane Walker, their partnership, 10% of that went to funding female entrepreneurs in the Los Angeles area. They've done a lot of partnerships like that. And they've built this new model that I think is positioned so perfectly because it leans in to women's sports and female athletes and our inherent activism. Like, again, just existing in the space, we're doing something for a greater purpose. And by them leaning into that and doing something that is good for the greater community, I think it just fits so well. So that's something that I've studied a lot and paid a lot of attention to. I mean, what they're doing is turning heads. I want to say they've booked, even before the first game that they played, something like $25 million in sponsorship revenue, which is just unheard of, unprecedented. So everybody is looking at this, and they're looking at this community-based partnership model that they built with the 10% going back. So definitely I was like, if I'm going to be doing research on women's sports sponsorship, I would like to document what's happening at Angel City and essentially write a case study so everybody can learn about this and see why this has been so successful. And maybe there are elements that we across the industry can pull from and apply to the work that we're doing in our respective teams and communities.
Y'all, this habit I have of editing things well after the fact is a bad one, and I'm working on it. I know that sometimes I'll listen back and remark on the way that my own perception on the conversation has evolved or how a phenomenon I interviewed someone about has unfolded and how that usually renders the content useless. First, I'll say that that is not the case here, and this conversation with Caroline is evergreen in my opinion. I hope you feel that way so far. But it also taught me a lot about how complicated women's soccer remains, how consistently complicated it is, and how these women are still carrying so much baggage on the journey to the mainstream and to equality. Let me explain. 2 years ago, some players from the NWSL team, the Portland Thorns, went public with their experiences of being sexually coerced by a former coach. And it seemed like a lot of people in charge already knew about it, which kicked off a formal investigation of both the league and the Federation, U.S. Soccer. A year later, the same week that Caroline and I sat down for this conversation, the investigative report was published and subsequently reported on by the New York Times, detailing years-long abuses and cover-ups perpetrated by several owners and coaches in both the league and the Federation. And I asked Caroline about this. And I really don't want to gloss over any of it because it illustrates a point that Caroline makes very well. So first we have this Yates report, as they call it. The New York Times said it was stunning in how meticulously it detailed how many powerful soccer officials were told about abuse and how little they did to investigate or stop it. To give you some examples, One coach called in a player to review game film and showed her pornography instead. Another was notorious at the highest levels of women's soccer for alternately berating his players and then quizzing them about their sex lives. And a third coach coerced multiple players into sexual relationships, behavior that one top team found so disturbing that it fired him. But when he was hired by a rival team only a few months later, the original club, which had documented his behavior in their own internal investigation, said nothing, and instead publicly wished him well in his new post. That was former coach Paul Riley and the Portland Thorns. This clearly was something that the organization knew about for a while, but not until after the report came out, which was a year after the information had gone public, did the owner, Merritt Paulson, finally step away. That was October 4th, 2022. And the women who played for the Thorns at the time, despite dealing with all of that, won the championship at the end of that same month. This was also the same month that the Spanish women's national team coach Jorge Vilda responded publicly to accusations from his own players. There were 15 women, who the media called Las Quince, who spoke out against his, quote, dictatorial and emotionally abusive coaching style. If you've seen any of the Women's World Cup this summer, you'll know that Vilda is still coaching Spain, who made it to the final and won. And it was obvious as a viewer that players were not happy with him, like emotional celebrations with him standing alone on the field, dodged high fives. And it sounds really silly in the way that I am describing it, but it was drama. There were players who had actually removed themselves from roster selection over all of this, and the federation chose to back him publicly and demanded that any of Las Quince who wanted to keep playing for Spain had to formally apologize, and some of them chose not to. My point in sharing this is that it's an extreme and extremely unnecessary barrier, that it's a Herculean effort just to survive as an athlete under these conditions, and that these women shouldn't have to. Caroline makes a really, really great comment that I will obviously let you get back to listening to.
One of the things we do at Goals is we put out content. So we put out the podcast, we post updates on women's sports on our social media channels. And yesterday tweeted about the incredible milestone that the NWSL has reached, which is this season, they hit 1 million fans for the first time in the league's history. I put that content out in the morning, and then I get the New York Times alert about this report. And I was just like, do I delete this post about celebrating the 1 million fans? Because it's tough to celebrate a league that is treating their players and creating this really hostile work environment. And just, I think a confusing day for a lot of us in the space, and really tough. But, you know, at the end of the day, I was talking to my sister about it, and it's absolutely amazing what the NWSL has been able to. And I, when I say the NWSL, I say the player, mostly like the players of the NWSL teams and the individuals working within the league, what they've been able to accomplish, like that 1 million fan mark, like these sponsorship deals, their incredible success with NWSL leading into the U.S. Women's National Team, despite all of the challenges that they face, this unsafe work environment, the pay gap, everything that they are up against, lack of media coverage, and yet this league is thriving. Imagine where this league could be if these athletes, these organizations weren't dealing with all of these horrors. So my key takeaway is, like, once again, I am just absolutely amazed by female athletes, by the women's sports community that has their back. Because despite these incredible odds, despite these barriers, these horrors that they face on a daily basis, they're growing and they're succeeding. So I'm just blown away and in awe, and doubling down on my commitment to create a inclusive, equitable, safe, prosperous space for female athletes to work and for women's sports industry professionals to work.
I want to talk about the content you make for goals, specifically the podcast?
I had this idea to start the podcast, The Business Case for Women's Sports, that would both satisfy my thirst for learning about the women's sports industry. But also I felt at the same time we could build with every episode, like mini case studies about ways that we can move the industry forward by using the great examples of work already being done out there. The idea was to bring on leaders in the women's sports industry who are traditionally not really celebrated as much as their male counterparts. Again, there's not a lot of coverage of what's happening in the space. So I also wanted to use it as an opportunity to give some credit where credit is due and recognize the leaders that are really changing the game for female athletes. So welcoming leaders on that are working in women's sports and doing this work to grow the industry through their own organizations and their own teams and keep on making the business case for women's sports.
What are you looking forward to in the next few years with goals? Where do you see yourself going in the industry?
You know, that's a great question. And the women's sports industry is so new. You said this earlier, but like women's sports are really the startups of the sports world. So right now, Goals exists as half kind of content platform with the podcast and with the content we put out across our social channels, and then half agency side where we're, again, asking brands to come sponsor women's sports. So it's kind of like twofold. Like we're yelling into the internet about how brands need to invest in women's sports, and then we're going out and making that happen. You know, the thing with Goals, though, since moment one, is it's really shifted, to use your word, to kind of meet what I felt was needed in the space. So I felt like we were missing a podcast to talk about the business side of women's sports. So create that podcast. Okay, we have that. I recognize there was an opportunity. I think we all recognize this, but there's an opportunity for more money to come into women's sports. And there's a definite need for support to be given specifically to underfunded women's sports organizations. We're all underfunded, but the ones that are really, really underfunded. So created the business model around that. I think Goals is going to keep evolving as the industry grows to match the needs of the industry. I don't know what that looks like, but I'm okay with it. I think that's how I think a good business should operate, is listen to the customers. And then right now, the things that I think the women's sports industry need the most are educated on why it's good business to get involved and people going out and bringing those deals into the industry.
Now, where can people find you if they aren't already super social media savvy?
Yes. So you can follow Goals on Instagram and Twitter at Goals_sports_. But if you type in Goals Women's Sports, we come up right away.
Good.
The podcast is The Business Case for Women's Sports across every podcasting platform. And then I also love to put, I don't know, lots of content out on Twitter, especially about women's sports. Also my cat, which you may have heard meowing in the background of some of this episode.
I haven't. Something must be wrong with my headphones.
Oh my goodness. She's actually sitting on this chair with me.
Are you joking? What's her name?
She's here. Her name is Kendall. She's lovely.
Oh my gosh. So, Kendall, thank you for letting us take your time.
Kendall. Yes, Kendall is here on this episode. And then if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see some pictures of Kendall periodically. She is the mascot of Goals Sports. So
I love that. I love that. Thank you so much for allowing me to pick your brain. And I guarantee I will be reaching out to do it a couple more times over the next few years in a formal capacity, but I'll probably be bothering you a lot more than that. So thank you. I really, really appreciate it.
It's such a pleasure. Thank you for having me, for all you do, and always here to support and talk women's sports whenever you want.